Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 5:30 p.m. and that is British summertime. And today is August 1st. I'm recording a little earlier than usual because I've got a busy evening. But I thought we'd kick off with Chile. So the stock market index there has accelerated higher up out of the range that's been forming for the last 5 years and is a bit overbought in the short term. But the central bank in Chile cut interest rates yesterday, and or perhaps it was Friday, I apologize. And that has kick started the emerging markets beginning to cut interest rates. Now, many emerging markets have much more recent experience of dealing with inflation than many developed markets, so they were a lot quicker, particularly in Latin America, to raise interest rates and to do so extraordinarily aggressively. So they've begun to harvest the benefits of that, which has been that inflation has come down much more sharply in Latin America than it has elsewhere. So that's a direct response to an aggressive hiking policy. But what I find particularly relevant is that the stock market is performing. So the central bank is basically being rewarded by investors for with a strong economy, which is beginning to price in the potential that economic activity can start to recover from here. Well, Brazil. Well, then before we move to that, perhaps we should look at the currency because obviously a big interest rate differential has been supportive of several of the Latin American currencies. Now, the fact is that because they're cutting interest rates, that interest rate differential is likely to be contained and begin to narrow from here. So that's not especially good for it, and it is beginning to depreciate from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, Brazil will be making an interest rate decision tomorrow, and it is expected to cut interest rates by at least 25 basis points. If it does more than that, then I expect there will be a repercussion in the currency. Now, the Bovespa today is down about 1,500 points. It's right at the upper side of the range that's been forming. So I think this is more to do with a picture of dollar strength than we have today. And the expectation that if Brazil is cutting interest rates, perhaps now they are more worried about economic activity than they are the issue of inflation. One thing that we know for certain is that the USA tends, the market tends to underperform as soon as they start cutting interest rates because they don't generally do that until there's an economic problem. So how Latin American markets react and how their respective currencies react to the change in central bank policy is going to be a picture that we might view with when we try to think about what's going to happen in the Western world when that begins to happen. I suppose also in rather than saying the Western world, probably more correct to say the United States or in Europe. And then the Brazilian real has also got the potential to at least unwind some of its overbought condition, and it is weaker in here today. So we're definitely starting to see some pricing in of interest rate cuts. So we may not see the same degree of strength in Latin American currencies, and that is something that is likely to support the dollar because they haven't quite got inflation to where they want it just yet, and therefore there is the potential that the dollar can steady from here. And that is taking a toll on gold. So having been up yesterday is down today, and still consolidating and still holding in the region of that 2,000 level. Then as we think about the rest of the market, well, let's then spin back over and look at what's going on in Asia. So the Chinese property developing sector remains under pressure. Now let's look at two different examples. Country Garden is a privately held asset man or the property developer, and it was down again in here today. It has steadied in the region of the lows over the last week or two, but these are dynamic moves on the downside over the last couple of days. Then let's also just pay attention to China Vanke, which is state-sponsored and partially state-owned. So it's also still really quite weak. We had a good size upside key, upward dynamic rather than a key reversal. Let me zoom in and confirm that. Well, not quite an upside key reversal, but certainly an upward dynamic last week. But now it's looking like it's coming back down. Just like I've been saying for the last couple of days, investors, they want to see concrete evidence that the government is doing something rather than talking about doing something to support the economy. So that's certainly weighing. But then you also have, particularly for Hong Kong, well, the peg is not under pressure, but because the peg is in there in the first place, it means that Hong Kong has got to absorb US interest rates. So the mortgage rates are moving higher, and obviously that is going to also put pressure on some of the property developers. And we have a similar situation going on in Saudi Arabia. With a pegged currency, then the Saudi economy has to absorb US interest rates as well. And they don't have nearly the same inflation problem. In fact, I don't think Saudi Arabia has an inflation problem at all. But certainly, we are seeing higher interest rates impeding some of the demand for credit in the kingdom. Now, the Tata Wool index has rebounded quite impressively over the last 5 or 6 months. It's pausing now in the region of the 12,000 level, and I think that is in response to a little bit of pause and consolidation for the oil price. And Brent crude, having got up to test the upper side of the range over the last 7 months, is now pausing in the region of the $85 level, not in a dynamic manner by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly it has broken back up through the 200-day moving average. It is in the process of breaking the medium-term downtrend, and I think this is an important development. So one thing that we should continue to remember is that the USA Strategic Reserve has been largely spent. So there isn't a fresh source of abundant new supply around to support or to, I suppose, contain price appreciation. If there is a supply deficit. So when we then think about what that could mean, well, it's obvious that it could help to inflate asset prices and contribute, excuse me, it could inflate inflationary pressures, put downward pressure on asset prices. And then obviously it would help to stoke inflation. And that's not good news for central banks that are trying to cut interest rates. Now, I think when we look at the copper market, it's been exceptionally difficult. We've had really just one day up, one day down. And today's downward dynamic, it's just another failed break above the $4 level. The big challenge, of course, is that the dollar has been firming, China is weak, and at China accounts for more than half of all copper demand. So what happens in China is really going to dictate what happens with the market. Now, obviously, we have a lot of concern about climate change in the media, and there is a lot of worry about some record temperatures during this summer. But I think we should also just pay attention to the fact that China is manufacturing a lot of the renewable energy equipment, but not using nearly as much of it. So they're more than happy to allow the rest of the world to tie themselves in knots without actually deploying a lot of the technology themselves. They're still building coal-fired power stations. And perhaps the rest of the world should be paying attention to what China is doing rather than what they're saying. And that's certainly what investors are doing with the Chinese stock market. Now, let's also just continue to monitor India, where the Nifty index has been clearly outperforming the Chinese market, but still a little bit overbought and pausing in the region of the big psychological 20,000 level for the Nifty. Got right up to test it 2 weeks ago, and we're getting a bit of pause consolidation. And this wouldn't be a surprising area to see a somewhat deeper process of consolidation take hold. And then the Bombay Banks Index is also pausing here, not in an especially dynamic manner, and it hasn't been a deep pullback either. But perhaps we will see a reversion back down towards the 200-day moving average. When we then look at Europe, I thought today was a particularly interesting day for UK markets, where we had HSBC announcing stronger earnings, BP saying that they're going to be buying back shares and certainly likely to benefit from a higher oil price overall. And yet, the FTSE 100, having been up for most of July, was in mildly negative territory today. And when we then think about the leading decliner, well, property prices in the UK are starting to contract. And that's not particularly good news for property developers. So Beazley Homes, having had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend at the beginning of the year, then had a period of right-hand extension, is now right back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. The point that I've been laboring over the last several months is that if quantitative easing inflates asset prices, where we saw a decade of central banks raising interest rates, excuse me, raising the size of their balance sheets, cutting interest rates. And then that helped to inflate the stock market, the bond market, and then the property market and collectibles and crypto. So all of that money getting printed has massively inflated asset prices. So if quantitative easing creates asset price inflation, isn't it reasonable to at least consider the possibility that if we have quantitative tightening, then it will lead to asset price disinflation or deflation? And that's what we're seeing in the property market now in the UK. We've also seen that Rolex prices, or secondhand Rolex prices, are starting to come back down following the excesses of the pandemic. That bond yields have jumped higher, which of course represents a decline in price, and we have been in a corrective phase for stocks. Now, obviously, stocks have also benefited from the ability of some companies at least to raise prices. Not every company has been able to do that, but some of the largest have successfully raised prices. So we're still in the region of the peaks for the stock market because stocks generally reflect the inflation rate. But we should also just all be aware that valuations are rather high on Wall Street, and eventually the dollar will roll over. And one thing that is we should also consider in terms of that quantitative tightening is that when the US government is selling more bonds, what they are effectively doing is siphoning additional funds out of the economy. So what that is basically doing then is contributing to the liquidity contraction that is a product of both raising interest rates and reducing the size of the balance sheet. When they have to just simply borrow more money, it's taking money out of the banking system. So the Nasdaq is right in the region of the 16,000 level, which was at the region of the peak from back in 2021. So it's a natural area where we should see some pause and consolidation. And I think that is a more than likely scenario. When we think where is money likely to go, then the dollar is going to be the linchpin of that question. If we see the dollar trending downwards and it is currently rebounding to test the region of the 200-day moving average, well, now we need to at least consider that this is the first area of potential resistance. If it can sustain a move up and through the 200-day moving average, well, then it will have found support of more than short-term significance, and we might be in for a lengthier period of strength as central banks around the world begin to cut interest rates before the Federal Reserve. But of course, when the Federal Reserve begins to cut rates, well, then that interest rate differential will start to narrow once more against the dollar on this occasion. And of course, that is going to put downward pressure on the dollar. I think the most likely scenario over the next decade will be that the dollar will trend downwards. The bubble in technology will be not nearly as impressive, and we'll start to see greater resources internationally devoted to renewable energy and to, or at least to some kind of revolution in electricity production. Whether that is in the nuclear sector or the hydrogen sector or potentially both. But what we can then think as well is that there will be geopolitical tensions, that other countries will be relied on for manufacturing labor outside of China, that will have an, I think, a boon in or a boon or a bonus for many of those countries. That it will be a similar type of market environment to what we had in the early 2000s, other than the fact that it will be different commodities will be in play and it will be different countries that will benefit. And harking back to BRIC and the talk of the BRIC nations forming their own gold-backed currency, I think that isn't going to hold water, that we're much more likely to have major manufacturing become a central focus, and its countries like Mexico and India, Nigeria and Vietnam will be among the biggest beneficiaries of this evolving situation. But we have to go through a recession first, and as we think then about the bond yields, well, 10-year yields are still holding here in the region of 4%, and that's the upper side of the range. With the US government issuing more, there is the potential that yields will appreciate from here. And of course, what that will also do is put greater pressure on the stock market and on the economy generally, because it will start to put upward pressure on borrowing costs. And that is most particularly true of mortgages, because mortgage rates have been holding pretty steady north of 7%. But if the 10-year yield breaks higher from here, it's going to push mortgage rates up even further. We're starting to see property price pressures coming through in places like Australia and the UK, and it's potential that potentially true that Canada will experience some of the same pressures, and they had a negative quarter of growth. But the USA has largely been preserved because of the large number of people that have got fixed rate mortgages in the region of about 3 or 3.5%, so they're not going to be impacted to the same extent. But markets work on the actions of the marginal buyer, and the marginal buyer is going to be paying very high mortgage rates right now, and they're certainly anyone who's buying right now needs to buy because there's not nearly as much supply. So they are betting that interest rates will stay down, and that will be a factor that will be a part of the market for quite some time to come. So if one is making that bet, then you're really bullish about the outlook for interest rates to come down and inflation to disappear. So we're certainly in a difficult market environment. When markets don't make sense, it's usually because valuations are doing one thing and trends are doing something else, and it's hard to parse exactly what's going on. We've definitely had a big jump in valuations over the course of the last 6 months, and that is directly in response to the expectation that the interest rate environment is close to peaking. The yield curve spread may be bottoming. It was below 100 basis points just last week. It's now at 85. Of course, we're still in deeply negative territory, but it's when the yield curve spread trends up through zero. That's usually when we get the biggest selling pressure, and stock prices are quite overbought, particularly for the mega caps. And we have negative RSI divergences for several of those companies. So that also then implies that there is a period of weakness in front of us. So this is a time to be particularly diligent about stop strategies. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.